ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys, Corp Middlemass and Ed Cowan. Second week in January, but we're still here. Ashes is done. We're going strong. There's cricket being played all around the world. I'm back in my familiar surrounds, which for those of you that see our socials clips from time to time, is a beautiful orange background. I'm in our studios in ABC Melbourne, and it is every other week, so it's an off week, which means Ed Cowan is somewhere in the world. He's not in Sydney. It feels like one week he's in Sydney, next week he's somewhere else. Teddy, where on earth are you today?
Oh, give it a rest, Corb. I am in the middle of nowhere, it feels. I'm like halfway between Queenstown and, like, if you look on a map, Palmerston, like central Otago.
Okay.
At a little pub in a, it's not even a town, it's a pub in Wendaburn on the old Otago rail trail.
Wow.
And oddly enough, so we stopped in this little town. We've got these bikes. We stopped this little town. And I befriended this Kiwi cricketer in 2000 and, I don't know, when was it? 2008 in Edinburgh. Warren McSkimming, whose two interests were shooting and beer drinking.
Wow.
Closely followed by bowling, decent medium pace and slogging it, but great fella. We became great red hot mates, fell in and out of contact, but hey, anyway, we're at this tiny little village. There was a pub and a corner store, and they had like this little honors board of people who have represented New Zealand. It was that's like some guy in curling and Warren McSkimming.
That's great.
So I sent him a text. I was like, I've finally tracked where you're from, and there is nothing. No wonder he was good at cricket. There was nothing.
How good's that? And I can't believe it, Teddy. This is how much you love the Super Smash, that here you are in January over there for to watch some T20 cricket.
Just doing my diligence. You know, it's all over the TV here. It's about 10 people, 4 sheep and a TV crew covering the Super Smash. There is no one there.
Oh, man. Oh, you think our tournament's struggling? Holy smokes. That thing, it's a hard watch. I tuned in yesterday when it started raining in the Hurricanes Sixers game, and I thought, oh, I'll see what's going on over here. And the first thing I saw was at the Basin, which I'm lucky enough to have done test cricket at in my profession, obviously, as a broadcaster, not playing, obviously. And I noticed the commentator, Teddy, was actually trying to sell people on the wind. So obviously, Windy Wellington, he was basically saying, oh, look, you might be thinking it's too windy to come to the cricket, but it actually adds to the unpredictability of the contest and everything. And it's just showing shots of random people on the hill with, like, the most insane gusts of wind you can imagine. Didn't look like the most pleasant time at the cricket. So, hey, all the best to the New Zealand Super Smash.
Just picking up on something you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the Big Bash is struggling? Because...
No, I don't.
You said, if you think our competition's struggling, I think it's actually having a little uptick. Like, attendance-wise, I know the Sixers Hurricanes game that got rained out, I think it was the largest non-Sydney Smash attendance at SCG that was a non-finals game in the history of the Big Bash. Wow. And so, I don't know. We'll pick apart the Big Bash. I think cricket's been okay, but I actually think in a big summer where cricket is absolutely top of the agenda, people are turning out for it.
Agree. You've been critical of the Big Bash in the past, though. I think you feel it's capable of more for where it is at the moment.
It's definitely capable
of
more.
That's what we mean.
I'm not denying that, but what I've loved is the Aussie guys, 3 days, well, in some cases 2 days after the test series, turning out for their Big Bash teams. I assume that was a directive. But all of a sudden, people, they want to see the big stars. People are voting with their feet. So, yes, I've been critical in the past, and I still think it is, you know, has a risk to the downside and a huge potential to the upside. But we've got to keep working to make it a better competition.
So if you haven't been keeping up with what's going on in the Big Bash, and perhaps you've had to have a couple of cricket-free days after the 5 days that you got during the Sydney Test, and now you're listening to us trying to get back into it for finals time and wrestle back some control over the radio and the TV. Alex Carey came back, played for the Strikers, got 71. Marnus and Khawaja both back for the Heat. Michael Nisa returns on January 14, so he's back in 2 days' time. Jack Weatherord and Bo Webster available for the Hurricanes and featuring there. Brendan Doggett rejoins the Renegades. He's been travelling around as really the concussion sub with the Australian team, having played the first couple of games. Inglis back for the Scorchers. Smith and Murphy back for the Sixers. Mitchell Stark to return on January 16. He will wear just number 56, not to be confused with 056, which his mate Bubba's wearing. There's no Travis Head. He's freshening up for the T20 World Cup. No Scott Boland. He's on injury management. Cummins and Hazelwood are managed slash injured, obviously with the plans that they'll be going to the T20 World Cup. Nathan Lyon's injured. And then Cam Green's the only one I haven't mentioned. He's freshening up too. He's also uncontracted, so he's not actually on the Perth Scorchers list at present, but he's also not going to play ahead of the T20 World Cup. And obviously he has IPL commitments that will follow, but that's a pretty good return. I mean, I was surprised. Awesome. I needed more of a break than that. I was all of a sudden sitting at home. I was exhausted after 5 days of Test cricket. Turn on the TV on Sunday, and all these guys are running around playing. It's It's. I think most of us would have forgiven them for having at least another couple of days off, and they were straight back into it.
Caught me off guard for sure. And you can imagine Usman and the emotional hangover which he would have suffered to come out and bat the way he did. It was almost the weight was off his shoulders totally. He played superbly. So great for the competition and amazing that the Aussie guys turned out, not just rolled out of the Test Series, but have all contributed. Alex Carey last night put on a show. So for these guys, it almost serves as a little palate cleanser, if you will, just to get that out of the system. And for those that are in the World T20 squad, to get in that frame of mind. And for those that aren't, just to get back into enjoying their cricket for their franchises.
Just on those guys in the T20 squad, so I've done a little bit of analysis, I guess you can call it here, Teddy. As we like to say, research is not just a suburb in Melbourne ahead of the T20 World Cup. And how our guys are going. And you'd be interested to note, if you look at our sort of first choice 11 as it's currently sort of structured up, so Marsh and Head opening, Marsh, sensational form. Yeah, he's big
flying.
Tick. Absolutely flying.
Absolutely flying.
What's he got? 100 and a score of follow that up with 88 against the Adelaide Strikers. Travis Head's not playing, but I think it's fair to say we're not worried about Travis Head on the back of scoring 600 runs in the Ashes series. Then you've got Green, who's not playing. Inglis, who's just come back, hasn't played a heap. Tim David, who's injured. Marcus Stoinis, who's playing some reasonable cricket. Glenn Maxwell, who's struggling. So Maxwell, by the way, I think he's got one wicket he's bowled in every game. He's got one wicket, which was the first match he's played. He's got two not out scores, a 20 odd and a 30 odd. And then other than that, he's been dismissed four times without getting to three. So he hasn't had the tournament he would have hoped for. Two of our quicks are on injury management, coming back in Cummins and Hazelwood. Adam Zamp has barely played. I think he's played two matches he's due to play tonight, coming back from a neck complaint. Nathan Ellis is an absolute warrior. I don't think we're too concerned about him, particularly in those conditions. And then you've got Connolly, Short, Bartlett and Kuhneman as the other guys in the squad. So a couple of guys on the upswing, couple of guys only so-so with obviously our next major tournament just around the corner starting on February 11.
It's so funny to try and dig deep into T20 form because in many respects, the format is about confidence, and confidence is obviously born out of success. But for these guys, a lot of the time it's just having a clear mind and going out and playing with freedom. And sometimes the lows are very low and other times the highs are very high. So, Maxwell specifically, gone is the day of trying to read through Glenn Maxwell's last 10 scores to work out what the next one is going to be. It's a toss of the coin. And on any given day, we know he can win a match. I feel like a little bit of an idiot because I think before the Big Bash started, I said he was going to be player of the tournament. I just thought it was kind of there for Glenn Maxwell to really dominate, but it's been a bit of a hard watch and a bit of a slog for him for sure. You're right, the rest, aside from really the captain, you're not seeing much to really suggest that Australia are the team that we expect them to be. But on the flip side of that, I think, they've won 13 of their last 16 games. They are the form team as a cohesive unit, probably in the world. And, going to India, it's hard to look past India, but it's only a short look and you think, ooh, Australia are going to give this a shake, irrespective of form going in. But it's it's kind of an interesting talking point in terms of where the team is at, so to speak.
Yeah, and I mean, you'd love them all peaking, wouldn't you? And, you know, seeing signs. And yet the times, as you say, when the form lines are like that, doesn't necessarily translate into a great tournament and the other way around as to whether they're stuttering on the way in and then put it all together when tournament play begins. I think
conditions are so different as well, Corp. Yeah, so, that's the other thing. Also, you don't want people peaking too early at, before a tournament. Who cares?
Yeah.
For these guys, it's almost a warm-up just to get in the mental frame. And secondly, thinking of the wickets they're going to and ground sizes in Sri Lanka and India, please, you couldn't get anything further from that. So there is a temptation to try and thread a narrative here, but I'm reluctant to do it.
The table as it sits at the moment in the BBL. By the way, I'm sure Oman will be struggling, studying the form line closely. They'll be keeping an eye on the BBL and thinking, oh, this is interesting. The guys haven't played in a while. They're out of form. But that's our pool stage, by the way. Oman, Sri Lanka, Zimbabwe and Ireland. So talk about there's a few warm-up games, I think, before we actually get to the fair income stuff at the World Cup over in Sri Lanka and India. The Sixers, our Sixers, the Sydney Cricket Sixers, it feels like they've got it all. They're in the four at the moment, and with the games to come, they play the Thunder next, who everybody's beating. They've only won the one game, but little banana peel game, obviously being crosstown rival and all that. And then they play the Brisbane Heat in Brisbane. So it feels like for them, it's pretty straightforward. They win those two games, they play finals, they get that last spot. They have any kind of hiccup and all of a sudden they open the door for the teams like the Heat, the Strikers and the Renegades who are on the outside looking in. And as has been the bizarre nature of this tournament the whole way through, and I know fixturing's challenging, blah, blah, blah. But it does seem weird that you've got, a team like the Hurricanes have one game to play leading into a final series. The Renegades have three games to go. So I don't understand how we get to this point, and at least we all haven't leveled off at a certain point with two games to go or whatever it turns out to be.
Definitely makes it hard to follow. And, I mean, scheduling the Big Bash is non-impossible, but you're right. Particularly in a shorter season where people aren't playing each other home and away, it kind of doesn't feel like it washes out. I think if the Sixers win both, they're a decent chance of hosting a final. But you're right, they seem to be peaking at the right time of the year, and Smith and Stark are back, and so they look a dangerous team. They look from a team that looked very old and slow to a bit of a danger team, I think. The Heat, again, kind of, that will be a good game against the Sixers to see actually where this team's at, because they look a good team on paper with Kawaja and Labuschagne back, Renshaw playing good cricket. But we're kind of back to where we started. Everything's really the same as it is every season, and that's the Scorchers and the Hurricanes really really showing the way in terms of what the gap between the very best and the worst looks like. I don't know if you've watched much of the Thunder. I don't know where their season's gone wrong, really. Maybe when
every single
on paper, they look a great team.
Every single game I watch them, I think they're going to win. Like, it's just, you look at their team, you go, oh, that's a great side. I don't understand how they're not capable of more. Notice they dropped Sam Constance too. So he fell out of the team on the run, which, rewind 12 months ago, he was the talk of Australian cricket. Now he's not playing for his BBL team.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because a team that can't play in the finals, my mind as a New South Wales director goes to, hang about, why wouldn't we be playing the young New South Wales kid ahead of the WA import? And that's not franchise cricket mentality, I get it. But we've got a young kid that we can get more cricket into that can actually, every game is an opportunity for him to shine. So
he's also a bigger draw commercially.
Yeah, for sure. So that felt a bit hazy. The only thing that I can think of is they set their team up to play, spin heavy. And if you think Ashwin was also a key signing. So a spin-heavy kind of defensive spin lineup and attacking batters. What they've ended up is on great wickets. I think they thought they were going to end up on the Homebush Dust Bowl that we've seen. And in actual fact, it's been a sensational place to play cricket. The ball's flowing through and they haven't really had those fast bowling options. Lockie Ferguson was obviously meant to be a international replacement. They haven't really been able to take new ball wickets, and so they've kind of muddied you know, muddied their thinking along. They don't look all that clear tactically. Must be hard as well. Their captain, you know, in and out of training and commentating and playing a little bit and playing well, mind you. So yep. Nothing against that. But sometimes teams that are, you know, need to be evolving on the fly need someone thinking about that, you know, 24/7. And I know, you know, Trevor Bayliss' fantastic record as a coach is probably on the, you know, the passive side as a coach. He's a pretty relaxed kind of coach. And sometimes that blend between coach and captain is important. And if your captain's absent, even though playing phenomenal cricket, you rely on a really active coach. And, you know, maybe that isn't working for them at all. Because at the start of the season, you know, I thought they were probably on paper the best team. And you're right. Every time you turn the TV on, you think, wow, yeah, this team's could be white hot and should be winning. And they've found ways to lose.
The best player went home too. Obviously got picked for Pakistan in Shadab Khan, who looked like he was going to have an outstanding tournament. And yeah, it just they haven't been able to get it together at all. They're not the team I want to play though. Like if you're the Sydney Sixers, you've been thinking, oh, damn. Like you can just see them getting themselves up for one big game at the finish, and to beat their crosstown rival would be it. Interestingly, when you look at the run home for these teams and who they play is important at this stage of the tournament. And again, I spoke a bit about this last season, I think, on our pod, where yeah, particularly now where you only play 10 games, you cop three teams twice. And if you cop, say, the Hurricanes and the Scorchers twice, it has a huge impact on whether you get 5 wins to qualify for the finals or whether you ultimately miss out. The Heat have 2 to go. They play at Hobart against the Hurricanes, where it's tough to win. And then they've got the Sixers at home to finish. So that's not an easy finish for them. The Stars probably still need to win one more game. They play the Strikers, and you don't want to have to wait and try and beat Perth in the last game to get there. So they'd want to be ticking the box against Adelaide. If Adelaide win that game, things open up for them with a match against the Renegades to try and level off at 5-5. And the Renegades, just due to the fact they've got so many games left, they play the Thunder tonight, they've got the Scorchers to come, and then they've got to go to Adelaide and play the Strikers. So there's still a path there for them, but they'd probably need to be winning all three of their remaining games, the Renegades, to get there from here. Or you reckon even two games?
I think they win two and make the four.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Let's see if they can sneak in and get there at the end. You teased this out the other day, Teddy, about the fines of the BBL. And this is one of the great parts of the tournament, is that, you know, we learn about new faces and players that bob up and introduce themselves to the Australian cricket fraternity. We said we'd throw some out this week, and I've been chatting to people close to Australian cricket, had my ear close to the ground to see who we could throw out there as perhaps some potential fines of the BBL. But I'm happy for you to go first if you want to lead us off.
Well, I definitely teased this out the other day. The one that's caught my eye is Joel Davies. So I think those around New South Wales cricketers have known him to be an incredibly talented cricketer. So Ollie's younger brother, Ollie, was really, you know, a first-class 100 or two away from Test cricket a couple of years ago when he scored 3 in a first-class season, and then, you know, has struggled probably since. Younger brother, very talented, rocket arm, bowls left arm, orthodox spin, and gives it a whack. Pretty good combination. But all three of those have been firing this season. So, you know, limited opportunity in the past. But, you know, we saw in Coffs Harbour on a bit of a sticky wicket, being able to turn the ball prodigiously. We saw him finish a game off at the SCG. The other night we saw him again with the bat, and look out in the field. He's an absolute gun. So people have known he's been able to play. It's actually good to see. I think the Sixers have probably struggled regenerating their team and giving some of the younger players a go. But, you know, someone like a Lachie Shaw as well, who can play a lot, who's kind of in and out of the team. But that's the name I'd probably put forward. He feels like he's got his head in the right place. He's playing good cricket and has really been able to show what his cricket is all about.
Nothing that hasn't already been said before, but we got to put a light on Ollie Peake, don't we? Like sometimes I think when guys are so well declared that it almost becomes monotonous in a way where, you know, people sit here and, oh, of course he's going to be a star. Everyone says, yeah, he's going to play for Australia one day and everything else. But you also got to remember this guy's 19. Like he's about to go and lead the under-19s at the World Cup, which starts any day now. But for him to do what he did the other night and the way that he worked his way through that inning, so low run chase, 128 needed. And it, by the way, it wasn't as if everything was coming out the middle of the bat. He was struggling. And even in that last over, played a miss trying to get one away. And then basically to have the wherewithal to go, right, short boundary straight, long boundary square. I need to get a boundary to try and win this game. And he would have seen you know, basically the equation shrank over a period of time. He was almost out where, you know, Ashton Turner ground the ball, taking that catch. So he'd sort of been through all these rhythm, the rhythm of the innings, basically. And he would have been in a position where he thought, I can get this team home. Then he would have seen the game disappearing. And then all of a sudden it comes down the last ball and still in that moment to go, you know what, I'm going to run around this and hit it over fine leg for six to win the game off the last ball before his 20th birthday. Like, it's, I think, so, like, you know, sometimes when you're looking at something just from the eye test that you're watching something special. And it felt like that kind of a moment, like when Cooper Conley started in the final, for example, that we'll look back in, you know, 10 years' time, 12 years' time or whatever, and remember that moment as really his, you know, his coming out party, his arrival moment in Australian domestic cricket.
Yeah, well described. I mean, two things just while we're talking about that innings specifically. Everyone in the world that has ever stepped foot on a cricket field would say that Ashton Turner's catch was a fair catch.
Agreed.
That was ridiculous, by the way. Absolute over-officiating, just got it wrong. So... We haven't had a chance to discuss that.
But everybody after Stark at Lords or whatever would go
very different running back, and then like, what's he meant as opposed to diving? And okay, now I'm rotating my hand. This the ball probably touched the grass for less than a millisecond. It wasn't like he was dragging his hand across to stabilize himself. He's running back. He's taking a good catch. And landed. Like, it was actually mind-blowing that it ended up as a non-catch. Anyway, back to the main start. Yep. Let's talk about Ollie Peake, because you're right. What I saw from that innings was, forget the outcome, was his ability to solve problems. And batting is about solving problems on the fly and dealing with pressure at the same time. And the pressure only mounted. And the three balls before that, or four balls, he'd clothed. Like, the hard length, couldn't actually get it away, as you said, was actually really struggling. And then so, you know, the chances of him hitting the same shot and clothing it and getting one and they lose the game is pretty high. But most people his age would revert to that. Okay, yeah. My plan A is X. Plan A hasn't worked. I'm going to stick with it. And he would have got the same outcome, more than likely. Instead, he says, actually, I've got all the tools. I'm going to dip back into my tool bag and solve this problem differently and play a shot that, you know, caught the bowler off guard and had to manipulate manipulate the ball to get it where he did. And it was just the last ball of an innings. Unbelievable. Like, a star was definitely born, had risen and was now at the top of the sky. So that's been awesome. The other name, I mean, we talk about him in Shield cricket the whole time, is Campbell Callaway. I didn't realize his spinners were as handy, for instance. You know, like, so to see different prongs of players. So we know him as a majestic left hand opening batter, and we know he could field. All of a sudden, he's rolling out these finger spinners that are very, very serviceable for T20 cricket. And so there's just little glimpses of this next generation that you think, oh, yeah, there's something to really like with it. Mm.
Two feel-good human interest stories for the tournament, both born in India, both now playing their cricket here. So Nikhil Chaudhary is obviously one, the leg spinner from Tasmania. This is a cool story. Like, this is a guy that was out here during COVID, basically got stranded during the lockdown, was playing club cricket in Queensland. James Hopes basically found him and said, hey, you should be playing high-level cricket than what you are. He obviously got a first-class century playing for Tasmania and he's now obviously has a role to play for Hobart in the BBL. So that's just a cool story. He's a guy that's born in Delhi, represented Punjab in domestic cricket, and now he's out here playing domestic cricket in Australia. And Jerzis Vardia, who, this is a story. So
I thought this is the one you were going to direct us to.
And this young man, unfortunately, left out of the team last night. But the innings in particular we want to focus on was obviously his 34 off 16, where he hit three consecutive sixes at one stage. How about this as a human interest story? So born in India, lived there until he was 17, basically moved from Mumbai to Adelaide with little money, nowhere to live, against his parents' wishes to pursue a career as a pro cricketer. So that's a fairly big punt to be playing South Australian domestic cricket. His dad's involved in Bollywood. His mum's a teacher and taught Hardik Pandya. He doesn't have a car in Adelaide, so he drags his kit bag onto the bus to make sure he can get where he needs to go to training. and then gets the opportunity. I heard an interview with him. He did with Adam White and Brad Sundaresan on Cricket Australia's website, and he spoke so well. It was the most sort of beautiful story, and he was a confident young man in the way that he was able to articulate the journey that he'd been on. And an eye-catching game. He struggled a little bit since then. He had four single-figure scores and was left out. But can bowl some left-arm wristband. He's a left-hander. He's a stylish player in the way that he went about it, even in that small sample size. And again, just a feel-good human interest story.
And the only thing I'll add is I'm surprised this type of story hasn't emerged more. So having toured India and the amount of net bowlers that would out-bowl our test spinners 2-1 over, and you'd be like, oh, how old are you? They're like, oh, I'm 15. And I'm the 16th bowler in the state. And you're like, you should move to Australia, mate, because, you know, and so India is so competitive. The volume of cricketers, the political nature of some of the selections, I think we'll see this a little bit more, where 17, 18, 19-year-olds who may have played a little bit of, not professional cricket, but may have represented their state at under-19s, and they want to make a life as a cricketer, well, their skills are more than welcome. Yeah, and they're such different skills as well. And I'd actually love, you know, and not that this is the topic of the day, but, you know, if Australia were to privatise the Big Bash, you know, one way to increase TV rights is to have Indian players. Well, the IPL players aren't coming, folks. And so what you could do is say anyone, if the BCCI, anyone under the age of 21 that hasn't played in the IPL, there's some agreement that you can go to Australia and, you know, craft your trade. And learn it more and come back as a local domestic player or something that encourages these kinds of stories, because we'd be a beneficiary and so would Indian cricket. I'm all for it.
Kind of like what the NBL does with the NBA, where it's like send your next-gen star that wants to come down here and play, and then all of a sudden he's, you know, running around for Illawarra, and, you know, 3 years later he's on the court for the San Antonio Spurs or whatever it turns out to be. Two other guys that deserve a shout out here, just on the imports. It feels like a little soft, it must be said, that the import race so far this year. Yeah.
Very soft.
Rashad Hussain, we've liked his work. Just the second Bangladeshi cricketer to play in our competition. Leg spinner, handy lower order player. Expect to see him at the World Cup, and there's a whole other story to tell there about, you know, Bangladesh and how they're going to go in that tournament. With talk about, you know, politics and the rising political tensions between Bangladesh and India. For those of you that haven't caught up with the story, Bangladesh have said, look, we're not going. We want to play all our games in Sri Lanka. There are reports that the ICC have rejected that request. Bangladesh are saying, look, we haven't heard that, so that's ongoing at this stage.
And of course, that's off the back of the BCCI basically barring the only Bangladeshi cricketer in the IPL from participating in the IPL, which is a bit of an untold story as well.
And then Bangladesh have said, hey, we won't telecast it, so no one can watch it. And yeah, there's a whole there's chapters and chapters to that story, and more to be written. And then Harris Ralph, who's the leading wicket taker in the competition. So you think about, yeah, his national teammate Shahin Shahafridi went home. Babar and Rizwan have been playing, but scoring slowly the times that they have been out there. So it hasn't been a great tournament for the imports so far. So a little shout out to those two guys in particular who caught my eye. And I don't know if you can be a find in your ninth season in the BBL, but Sam Harper, ninth edition of the BBL. He's the leading run scorer, 356 runs, got that 84 not out against the Gades, hit 100 against the Sixers earlier in the tournament. He batted 5 in the first game, didn't get a hit, and since then he's gone to the top. How about these numbers? This is his tournament. 55, 110 not out, 29 not, 37, 20, 21, 84 not. His lowest score of the tournament is 20, and we're almost at the final stage.
He's playing good cricket. One of his other teammates, Kormai, the young, blonde, fast bowler that bowls a bit like Peter Siddle, similar action. Oh, no, it's Peter Siddle.
Oh, right. I was like, hang on. I was like, who have I missed?
No, the 41-year-old that's bowling 140 k's an hour and just hitting the block hole at will. Oh, I mean, ridiculous.
Yeah, still got it. Still got it.
Still got it.
All right. I think that's just about us in the BBL. Are we happy there for the time being?
I think with the biggest and best games still to come, we don't want to waste all our juice, Corb.
Yep. One man who is giving mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to ODI bilateral cricket is Virat Kohli, who has you should see Virat's numbers. His last five hits, he's gone 74 knot, 135, 102, 65 knot, and got 93 last night in the game. I'm sure you're up watching where they played in Gujarat against New Zealand to start a new bilateral series. But India had a win then. There, he had 6 boundaries in his first 20 balls. He will turn 39 during the 2027 World Cup in Africa. The question remains, will he make it, Teddy, as we sit here almost 2 years out? He'll get there?
Yeah. Greatest white ball batsman of all time. He's getting there.
This is so weird, though, isn't it? Like, for Rohit and Virat to have both retired from T20 international cricket, from Test cricket, and now they're embarking in this particular stage in the ODIs where they don't play really any other cricket. Except for the IPL 2 months a year and these random bilateral games. I think we've spoken about this a little bit in the past, but I don't know if they're sort of giving a little bit of the middle finger to the selectors saying, go on, are you actually going to drop me from this format of the game as well? Because they feel like, their exit probably wasn't handled that well in the other formats, but it's pretty hard to leave out when he's scoring like that.
Absolutely. I actually think that there's like a world of the conspiracy theory because, Indian cricket still makes a lot of money out of one-day international bilateral cricket. They're the only country that really does. And so the longer you keep your big names playing, the better it is for the back pocket, folks, and we know what incentive that provides. So maybe he's done a little deal, little revenue sharing agreement with the BCCI, and just the longer I play, the better your TV ratings are, and so let's all be in this together.
I don't mind it. It feels like their relationship wasn't all that amicable, but maybe that's all part of the story. Sort of selling
brings people together. Money brings people together, Corbin.
Nandani Sharma, by the way, speaking of Indian cricket, became the fourth player to pick up a hat-trick in the WPL, which is up and running, by the way. Only her second match in the tournament, playing for the Delhi Capitals. So she picked up Sophie Devine in her second over, which was the 11th over of the innings, and then came back to bowl the final over of the innings, which went for a single, wicket, single, wicket, wicket, wicket to complete the innings. Hat-trick ball. Ranuka Singh tried to lap it and was bowled leg stump. So well done to Nandani Sharma, who also became the first Indian fast bowler to take a fifer in the process, along with picking up that hat-trick. So well done her. Grace Harris has a hat-trick in the tournament previously last year, and in terms of previous fifers, includes two Australians, Elise Perry and the Irish-Australian in Kim Garth. We are 4 matches into this tournament. Only one venue's been used so far, which is a 43,000-seat stadium in Mumbai. All 5 teams have played across the 3 days at the same venue. So, reasonable crowds. Hasn't been, not sold out, but good noise and plenty of colour and energy from what I've seen watching on television. Is it time to concede, Teddy, that the WBBL is no longer the second or the best domestic cricket tournament in the world, and that the WPL, now in version 23, 24, 25, 26, version 4, that the WPL is now number one?
Well, I definitely think if that's the case, there's been a crossover only recently because, the WBBL had this crown firmly on its head, but has sadly been trending the wrong way. And we covered, a few of the reasons why, time of year, even though you love the October time slot. And so I think this might be the crossover season where the Big Bash has probably waned and the WPL's on the rise. Interestingly, Annabelle Sutherland and Elise Perry decided not to go for personal reasons. My gut feel is it's not necessarily worth their time. It's not like the men's league that has, life-changing money. They're making good money, but they're now very well-paid athletes and they kind of think the breaks is as good as the money. And so what I'm actually hearing is the BCCI thinking about withdrawing the NOCs for the Indian players to play in the WBBL, which would be an absolute dagger to the heart of that competition. And so it'll be interesting to see how that pans out because, if in fact the balance has tipped to the WPL and the Indian players can't play in Australia next year or moving forward, that's going to be tricky for catch up.
Why would that be in the BCCI's best interest?
Well, for the same reason that they're trying to make that league as big as possible, and so much like the IPL, they don't want their talent, being diluted and the brands being diluted by playing in other leagues. So I don't agree with it.
Yeah. Bit short-sighted. Like when they,
for sure. But they've got a league on the rise, yeah. we think. And, you know, it could be a little tactical play to make sure that it is, in fact, the number one league.
You could argue, though, how well that's served, you know, getting their players up to the level, playing against some great cricketers for, you know, 8 weeks a year and everything else. Shout out, too, for Nicola Carey. Talk about, you know, forgotten people in sport. Nicola Carey hasn't played for Australia now since 2022. And I look back on the, you know, the reasons why, and quoting from an ESPN article where back in 2023, she prioritised a preseason at home over being a fringe player on the road, turning down a national contract. Now, she had a good start to this tournament here. She's got both handy runs and also critical wickets. So still playing some good cricket at this stage of her career, but hasn't played again basically since late 2022 in either the T20 or one-day international format.
Yeah, but if you'd followed her domestic form in Australia... You know, this is someone that's absolutely dominated. The reason why Tasmania has been as strong as they have in the WNCL in the last 4 years, and you know the Hurricanes more recently has been on the back of Nick Carey, basically.
Will she play for the country again? Early 30s?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Okay.
That team is pretty well settled.
Phoebe Litchfield and Ash Gardner both with good starts with the bat. And Sophie Devine, who's arguably the world's best player and has been for a period of time, 32 off one over against Sneh Rana. Went 4-4, 6-6, 6-6 to take 32 and break the new record. So that's the early days of the WPL. All right, that'll do us, I think, for this episode of the ABC Cricket Podcast. Teddy, enjoy the rest of your time in New Zealand. I will chat to you when you have both feet back on Australian soil.
Can't wait, Corb. Thanks.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.